Ça fait maintenant là. Honorable members of the portfolio committee, the minister, the deputy minister, our team from the parliament, Ms. Nora, Mr. Denzin, and Tadiji, and the team from both offices of the minister and the deputy minister. Good morning. Office of the President, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We are having this meeting today after many pronouncements on the media about Easter, and even the minister reflecting in one of our committees about Easter. We felt that as the committee, we really need a detailed explanation of how Easter is going to be integrated in the department, its funding, and its functions. We felt that we have to have this meeting to discuss and to understand how do we interact, how do we oversight, how do we work with ESA as part of the department, if it is part of the department or part of the infrastructure investment that is in the office of the president, if it is in that office. So we felt that we really needed that as the portfolio committee. But when we are in any platform, we know what to explain and what to answer when we are asked about ESA as the portfolio committee members of Public Works and Infrastructure. With those few words, I just wanted to explain what the meeting is all about today and what we are expecting. But again, Minister, we want to raise this concern of us getting documents very late. An updated document came very late yesterday. We have asked for that to be corrected. We want to have enough chance to read, analyze, and understand the document before we come to the meeting. So a document for us arriving just a few hours before the start of the meeting is not good for some of us, in fact, for all of us. We want you to improve on that one. If we can get documents, at least when we have ample time to read and analyze the documents that we have been given. With those words, you are all welcome, honorable members, minister, deputy minister, and the team that is led by acting DG. Any apologies, Ms. Martinez?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to yourself, honorable members, honorable minister, DM, our colleagues from department, as well as the colleagues from the from parliament. We've got one apology that is from honorable Thring. He's attending another committee meeting, PC on tourism, so he won't be able to attend this this meeting this morning. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Honorable.
Yeah.
Honorable Graham Murray.
Sorry, Honorable Kapani contacted me earlier this morning to say she's had to go to the doctor this morning, so she has to also tender her apology, please.
Thank you, Honorable Graham Murray. Ms. Nola, I hope that we're correcting in terms of the number of members that are part of the meeting.
Yes, Chair, we are correcting. We can carry on.
Okay. Then over to you, Minister.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members, and once again, thank you for the opportunity. Let me address the first two issues. I agree with the Honourable Chairperson that we must make sure that the rule that we have in the department is that the members must receive all presentations 48 hours before the time. If the presentation is done earlier, we can send it, but not later than 48 hours. So I will definitely follow up on that, Chairperson, and then ask all of us to improve on the time. The second point that Chairperson raised around oversight, as I've said many times in the past, we are always ready to be held accountable and we respect the work done by the committee to have oversight over the executive and the departments. Just to inform Chairperson that a national council will be established that will oversee the implementation of the economic recovery plan. Similarly, in all the provinces, they will establish a similar provincial council and the same at a district level. So there will be also regular reports and monitoring about the implementation of the economic recovery plan, of which the infrastructure plan is part of that. So we can certainly agree with Chairperson and Honourable Members, if you want quarterly reports or whatever suits the committee, then we can arrange for that. Chairperson, we all know that on the in August 2019, the reconfiguration of government that has created a special department for infrastructure was gazetted in August 2019. In May this year, Cabinet approved the establishment of ISA. ISA is the administrative arm of the to implement the infrastructure in investment plan. Now we have the investment plan, we have the strategy, so the structure followed. And we had now put together a structure for ISA that will help us and drive the implementation of the infrastructure investment plan. Chairperson, we have done a lot of research. We have looked at what transpired in the fifth administration. There were many lessons that we could learn from there. And we then agreed that we need to change the methodology of planning to deal with infrastructure. And we set off to do that. As you also know, that the president also agreed to second Dr. Ramakgopa to the department. He is the head of investment and infrastructure in the presidency. And together with the presidency, we set off to drive this plan. And I must also acknowledge the role that the private sector played, because they worked together with us to design this new methodology of planning. So we had to design ISA, what will be the best suitable structure for ISA. And we've worked together with the Department of the DBSA, Public Service Administration. The minister assigned a team, and together we worked to put ISA together. And then on the 11th of September, 2020, Minister Mkunu approved the structure of ISA. So we are now going to take you forward to explain to the Honourable Members also a bit more about the legislative background, because the Infrastructure Development Act of 2014, it is what is guiding us in the implementation of infrastructure across all three spheres of government. I must say, Chairperson, that we have only received good support from all three levels of government, local government, provincial government. Our technical teams are working together. And I think everybody accepts now that we have to change the way we used to do things. Just with that little bit of background information, Chairperson, I will want to ask Dr. Hotenso Ramakgopa to just give run us through the presentation, and then thereafter we will be ready to answer questions. The DM and myself have been working very closely with the Office of the Presidency, with Dr. Ramakgopa, and we always are looking for ways to enhance what we are doing, you know, advice, any ideas of what we have put together. So we look forward to the input from the committee. Through you, Chairperson, I will ask Dr. Ramakgopa to present the presentation to you. And once again, my apology for the late arrival of the documentation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Minister, and good morning to Deputy Minister, the Chair of the Portfolio Committee, members of the Portfolio Committee. Just a bit of explanation. I think we did submit the presentation on time, much earlier than the stipulated agreed 48 hours. The only problem we had was that we always have two versions. We have the long version that we share with the portfolio committee, and then we have the short version that we generally want to present in a meeting, because we don't necessarily always have the luxury of time. So I only got to know last night that we only sent the short version to the portfolio committee. So we really want to apologize for that. So for that reason, I'm going to present the long version, which is what you got yesterday. So we'll make sure that we manage the process better going forward. If we can go to the next slides, because I don't have the benefit of the next slides, the substantive slide. Okay, so as the Minister has indicated, is that the Infrastructure Development Act, gives birth to a number of structures, which structures are meant to operationalize or give effect to the provisions of the Act. And the principal structure in the Infrastructure Development Act is the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission Council, Coordinating Council, which is chaired by the President. And you have in that structure the participation of the various ministers that the president would have chosen to participate in that PCC, and then you have a structure that I want to put this. Okay, thank you for allowing me to. Then you have a structure that manages the work of the PICC, which is called the Management Committee, is a much smaller structure, but is still populated by ministers, but chaired by the designated minister, which minister is the one that is responsible for infrastructure in the country. And then you have the PICC Secretariat, so this it deals with the more mundane, granular detail of the agenda items that have to be processed leading to the council itself. And again, this structure is chaired by the minister that is mandated with the infrastructure function in government. This is a much smaller structure. I think it's composed of, in addition to the chair, is another minister and two deputy ministers that that compose that structure. And then you have the administrative arm that ensures that the strategic integrated projects that would have been gazetted through the framework of the Act gets to be implemented and to provide regular reports to the Council. And how those reports are submitted, they first go through the Secretariat and then they get to be escalated to the Management Committee before they reach the Council itself. And that administrative arm is now chaired by the head of Infrastructure South Africa. So this slide really tries to demonstrate the genesis of ESA, its reporting functions as in the context of the overarching act that regulates infrastructure in this country, which is the IDA. And then the president had indicated that he foresees infrastructure to be a flywheel, if you like, the principal driver of the recovery effort, having hit by the pandemic and also being relegated to sub-investment grade by the rating agencies. So essentially, infrastructure is going to constitute, if you like, a cardinal pillar of the recovery effort. And in this regard, as we did report in one of the portfolio committee meetings about the Sustainable Infrastructure Development Symposium, which was essentially a platform that was designed to present to the private sector projects that have been originated primarily from the public sector. Some of them were private sector sponsored, which needed additional funding from the debt capital markets. We presented those at the SEEDS, the symposium itself on the 23rd of June, and we're able to attract the 340 billion rand, which allocation, or rather attraction the president made reference to in the reconstruction and recovery plan. And that set of first projects, really they constitute the first wave of the South Africa's infrastructure investment plan, which will be overseen now going forward by Infrastructure South Africa. And it's targeted about six sectors. The four are the network industries, energy, water, transport, and ICT infrastructure. And then it included human settlement and agriculture and agro-processing. And now going forward, the expectation is that we must also include the social infrastructure. So that's really part of the work, if you like, the first assignment that ESA had done, quality delivery in relation to its mandate. So we know that as part of reorganizing the infrastructure ecosystem in the public sector, like I've indicated, you have the council itself, and I indicated the structures that they report to that. Really, slide here begins to demonstrate what are the executive authority function, and also, if you like, the technical functions that will be performed under the auspices of this new reconfigured dispensation. Obviously, the executive authority oversees, if you like, the Act itself, the provisions of the Act, to the extent that they require executive authority oversight. And then the expectation is that we must also generate or produce a national infrastructure plan. And I'm sure that on a different occasion, we will share with the portfolio committee the work that is being done there. So there's tremendous strides that are made in formulating that infrastructure plan. Then there's an expectation that the executive authority will also provide oversight role in relation to the gazetted strategic infrastructure project. So we've added other to the list that is already existing, an additional set of strategic infrastructure projects. Let me also just indicate that for the ones that are historical, we are doing a review of those SIPs, and we are preparing a report that will be presented before the Council, so that the Council can take a view of what is the, if you like, the plight of those ships going into the future. And then there are issues around the oversight role in relation to ensuring that projects gets to happen, that over unblocking of the regulatory hurdles is indeed executed by the technical arm. And again, the technical arm, as I've indicated, is to ensure that we are able to develop and manage the national infrastructure plan, the pipeline itself, and also find the alternative ways of financing, including blended financing of infrastructure. So the president would have referred to a 1 trillion rand infrastructure program, and that is possible because the money will not be coming from the fiscals, will be galvanized, or if you like, from the private sector, and the way that makes it possible for us to afford the crowding in of private sector participation is because of the blended financing mechanism. The infrastructure fund, which is 100 billion rand seed capital that is incubated at the DBSA, and through that mechanism, the state is prepared to take the first loss. And because the state is prepared to take the first loss, you are de-risking the participation of the private sector. And therefore, we are able to get the additional investments from the private sector. We also are introducing new financing mechanism, innovative financing mechanism, innovative in the context of South Africa. Not that they are novel in the world. I mean, I'm talking project bonds. I'm also talking green infrastructure bonds. And I did indicate earlier on that how we are treating, if you like, the privatization of infrastructure now in the country. We are going to use the methodology that gave effect to the 340 billion rands to be attracted from the private sector. So essentially, they were looking at when we assess projects, the first question we raise is to what extent does the project support the sovereign interest, and then we look to ensure that the project becomes bankable. We prepare the project, working with the private sector, as the minister has indicated, to make sure that the project is bankable. And then we also look at the impact of the project, if you like, on issues not just limited to growth and employment, but also to spatial justice, to transformation, broadening the industrial base, and giving us an opportunity to access the bigger market that is the African market in the context of the Africa Free Trade Agreement. So one of the questions that were raised there is what are the reporting structures of ESA? So let me indicate, just to give more meat to what the minister has said. So cabinet has taken a decision that you want to introduce a new body that will drive infrastructure in the country as an agency, at an arm's length from government, if you like, a variant of an SOE. But then we needed to introduce a transitional mechanism because there's a legal provisions that you must satisfy for you to get to a point where essentially you are an SOE. You must make a business case, must be sufficiently consulted, and then cabinet will have the final say. And that is an inordinate process that will culminate possibly in that. But in the meantime, what has been done was that you are going to create a transitional mechanism. What is that transitional mechanism? Is that within the existing DPWR, you are going to have, if you like, for lack of better word, a branch that is referred to as Infrastructure South Africa. And the head of that branch will be at the level of a DG, gets to report directly to the executive authority. That structure was then put in place, and then as it is the requirement in government, the people who have the final say on the macro organization of the state is the Department of Public Service and Administration. So Minister De Lille, in her capacity as the executive authority, we made the submission to the DPSA, and that consideration was made by Minister Mchunu, and then ultimately a structure was approved by DPSA. This is as of August, about 2 months ago. So essentially this is, if you like, the structure that is ESA now. So you are going to have the head of ESA, and then you're going to have 4 deputy director generals. You are going to have 8 chief directors, 4 directors. You're going to have 4 specialists and 4 chief engineers. You're also going to have 4 deputy directors, office managers, administration officers, and personal assistants. So the point made here is that the structure exists. So when the minister referred to something called ESA, when the president referred to something called ESA, it does exist, given effect through the legal provisions in the country, and that is incubated at the DPWI. The chair raises a valid question. How do we interact with ESA? Because ESA is part of DPWI as we speak. So the same mechanism that the department uses to report, to account rather, to both parliament through the portfolio committee will be used for purposes of ESA. So ESA is not there in the presidency. It's sitting, it's residing with Minister De Lille, Deputy Minister Kivich, as a ministry, and then that is the structure that has that informs ESA. Then the next question is the funding. Really, this talks to the long-term aspirations of ESA. I did indicate about the National Infrastructure Plan. I did indicate that we are working on the financing mechanism so that we get to relieve the fiscals of the burden to fund infrastructure. The fiscal headspace has been decimated as a result of a combination of COVID and also a relegation to sub-investment grade. And then we continue to working on the pipeline to replenish the pipeline so that on the back of this there can be a funding. So one of the questions that was raised, okay, so you have this ESA in place, where are you going to get the money? So this is an in-year allocation. When I say in-year, so starting from ESA being in place in August, so there's been reprioritization of funding working with National Treasury. Obviously that effort was led by the acting DG and the CFO in DPWI. So there you're talking about compensation of employees. So all you simply did is, because in government there are levels, so you know what the designations are. So you work within the framework of the levels and the remunerations associated with those levels. That's how you arrive at 11,943,000. And then the question could be asked, goods and services, what are you procuring? One of the work, the assignments that the ESA has to do is to ensure that we begin to map the entire country from an infrastructure point of view. We begin to develop a system that is going to help us to develop econometrics and economic insights in relation to how the impact of infrastructure on the economy and the space. So essentially, if you look at the mechanisms that are there in other parts of the world, is that they only track the performance of a project. Is a project in construction? At what stage is the project in construction? So those are the mechanisms that they have. We go beyond that. We also make an analysis of a spatial analysis of what has been the reconfiguration of the space. And we also look at other socioeconomic indicators, because our view is that the measure of the country's progress should not just be GDP, must be issues around universal access to basic services. So there's an instrument, if you like, technology that we think exists that can help us to address those. And then you can see all other things are sitting at zero, because essentially ESA is being incubated from at the DPWI. So if it needs legal assistance and all other associated assistance, procurement and that, all of that is a function that already exists in DPWI. So you don't have to reproduce or duplicate those efforts. So what is the question is then, what happens to future years? I did indicate that this for the in-year allocation. And then we're working with the National Treasury, like all other departments are doing, to make submissions for purposes of allocation over the MTF. So that's the work that is happening. And once that is being approved, I'm sure we'll come through the same mechanism to report on the progress that has been made. So thank you very much, Chair. I thought I must share those insights. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Ramakgopa. I don't know whether, Minister, do you have any additions or what?
Yes, Chairperson. Maybe just 2 points of emphasis, and that is that the as you can see from the presentation, that ISA will also play a coordination role with all three spheres of government, all the national departments. We will be monitoring the implementation of the infrastructure investment plan. But when it comes to implementation, the implementation of the actual programs and projects will be done by the line departments, by the provinces, and by local government. ISA's role is to make sure that we do entities with project preparation to make sure that before any money of government is invested in an infrastructure project, that in fact the project is bankable, that we've done the project preparation so that we de-risk the project. I think it's just important to mention that because we are not taking the implementing functions away from the different spheres of government and the national departments. And just one last point, we have also, in terms of the Infrastructure Development Act, we have also advertised for an advisory panel. We have received over 1,000 applications for the different professions within the built environment. They all form from the private sector, and they are going to work together with government in implementing the plan. And so we are in the process of doing the shortlisting of the applicants. And I think by the end of this week, we will be ready to announce the professionals that will be helping us from the private sector to implement the plan. And then, of course, lastly, Chairperson, another emphasis is that all infrastructure in the country where we build and where we bring in infrastructure projects, we will also be guided by the spatial development framework of the country. Where exactly infrastructure is needed. The district development model is very important, and therefore we're working closely with the district development model so that we cover and we establish the needs for infrastructure in the whole of the country. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Minister. I now invite honorable members to comment, ask questions on the presentation that we have been given. I will check on the whether are there any that have raised their hands. So far, Honorable Graham Murray, followed by Honorable Hicklin, followed by Honorable Shabalala, followed by Honorable Hans Kalvig. In my device, those four honorable members have raised their hands.
My hand is also up, Chair.
Okay, then followed by Honorable Siwisa, though your hand, I can't see your hand here. It's there now. Honorable Graham Murray, Honorable Hicklin, Honorable Shabalala, Honorable Van Skalwijk, and the last one will be Honorable Suwisa. In that order, please.
Thank you very much, Chair. I hope you can hear me. My signal's very bad today, so I am battling a little bit. So I'm not
going to... You are audible, Honorable Member.
Thank you so much. The whole concept of ESA and the idea behind what they're trying to achieve and this coordination of infrastructure, I think is an amazing idea, because I think so much of our infrastructure in this country has been done in silos, and that's created duplication of effort that we can do away with respect to this. But I am still finding the information that we've been given on this project very vague. There's a lot of areas that we're just not getting any clarity on. In the first place, why do we need ESA if we've got the Infrastructure Coordinating Committee? Because surely that's the function of the PICC. So I'm not quite sure why we need an additional body to do what my understanding of the PICC and the secretariat thereof would still be doing. So it's almost like we're creating an additional layer of bureaucracy while we're actually trying to eliminate the amount of bureaucracy that is evident in this government. Also, in terms of the PICC, who actually does the oversight over that? Does it fall under the presidency, and is there oversight done there? Or will oversight of the PICC then come to DPWI as part of the ESA structure? So there's an issue around oversight there that concerns me. Then with respect to the reporting, we've got a head of infrastructure. Ostensibly, this falls under DPWI. Is the head of infrastructure on the same level as the director general of the DPWI? Or does he report to the DPWI DG? Or does he report directly to the minister? So you're creating a parallel structure within the DPWI with its own boss, if that makes sense. So there's no, if the DG is not the overarching head of ISA or ESA, it's a parallel structure within the department, which is a little bit concerning, and therefore doesn't ostensibly really fall under the DPWI, because the reporting is directly to the minister. I'm still very confused about this, so please forgive me if I'm not making too much sense in my questioning. We still don't have any real idea of what kind of structure we're dealing with, whether it's a committee or an SOE. Dr. Ramakgopa mentioned an SOE. If it's an SOE, would it then not fall under public enterprises? And why would it then fall under this department? Because this department needs its own sort of structure. But we don't have SOEs ostensibly under this department. I mean, IDT was, created in terms of a schedule. This has kind of been created in terms of what? So I'm not entirely sure where this body fits in, what type of body it is. It doesn't seem to have an accounting officer. It doesn't seem to have any CFO. Who's handling the funding for it, who manages the money that goes in and out of this structure, where's the money coming from? I'm not understanding whether or not the money, this money that you got the in-year funding, did that come from DPWI or did that come from National Treasury? And going forward, is ESA going to apply directly to National Treasury for its own funding, or will funding form part of the funding that DPWI gets? So I just need to understand where the funding for this structure is going to come from. I'm also concerned in terms of the approved positions. There are a lot of chiefs in this structure, and hardly any Indians. So I understand that you're dealing with high level information, et cetera, but you've got four deputy directors general. I mean, the salary bill of this entity is going to be absolutely through the roof in terms of what we're paying, because of the levels of the staffing in there. We also don't have any idea, you've got the structure in terms of the reporting, but we don't understand what deputy directors general are there. I mean, what do they cover? Is there somebody handling IGR? Because I think IGR would obviously be a critical component. but then are you not duplicating the efforts of Public Works, and would you not then be better placed to use the Public Works IGR Deputy Director General? So I just want to know, in terms of the four DDGs, because they will obviously then be managing their streams, are those completely different to DPWI, or are you duplicating efforts there? So are you going to have a construction DDG like you've got in Public Works in the ESA department? If the money that's been taken, that 23 million in your funding, has come out of the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, not directly from National Treasury, what projects have lost funding? So where has that funding come from within the department? And then also with respect to the advisory panel, where are the costs, what are the costs associated with that advisory panel? Because, I mean, you're dealing with professional people. I don't think they're going to be doing the work for free. So who will be funding the advisory panel? And then obviously that would then be who would then do the oversight over that? I think for now, that's me. Thank you very much.
Honorable Hicklin.
Thank you so much, Chair. Good morning, everybody. Honorable Graham Marie covered a lot of what I want to say. I'm still just going to touch on one or two issues. The IDT was swept under the carpet and no longer exists. Does this structure incorporate anything in terms of the IDT? Does it fit into ISA in any way at all? We talk about, the presentation talks about 100 billion rand seed funding from DBSA. As Honorable Marie said, we have an exceptionally top-heavy executive management structure. There are countless calls to reduce the public service wage bill. We are just bloating it completely and utterly out of proportion with the number of people who are being employed, and we don't actually know where and what they're going to be doing. An observation where on slide 13 or 14 where we speak about the need for an economic recovery because of COVID, I just want to throw into the mix, South Africa hit junk status before COVID arrived. We talk about mapping of South Africa in terms of infrastructure. This has been called for in this committee on countless occasions, by myself in particular, when I have asked for a complete asset register. Isn't that where we have to start? Everybody keeps talking about 81,000 parcels of land not identified, so many buildings also not identified, and now we have another structure that's going to be looking at mapping the infrastructure of South Africa, mapping the infrastructure managed by the DPWI. But isn't that what Guyana is supposed to be doing? I'll leave it there. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Shabalala.
Good morning, Chair. I'll apologize if I'll be lost during my input. The Acacia is not good where I am. Thank you for the presentation, Chairperson, and the opportunity to be part of this meeting, especially when you have a presentation that seeks to mitigate the effects of COVID-19. But even prior to that, we know that our country wasn't in a good economic standing. The economic recovery is very critical. But I think for me, this is a work in progress where we'll have to inquire and critique every aspect that comes with the implementation of the whole thing. Because some of the questions, for instance, is that you have 8 chief directors under the structure. You have 6 chief engineers, etc. My question would be that what happens with the people or the personnel that have been in the IDT that have been producing or contributing positively towards the infrastructure development and the service delivery? What is it going to happen with them? Are we looking at getting new people from outside that will start learning the nose and hows of it? Or we're looking at people that will hit the road running, because time is against us. We don't have the luxury of time. And they also setting up the structures, we need the time frame. When are we having this in place so that we know that by this term, the sixth term, we know that this is what the department or the government has been able to achieve. Chairperson, the issue of job creation for me is paramount, because you'll understand that COVID-19 has created havoc within our communities. It's even closer when you stay within the township or within the rural areas, because on a daily basis, you see the plight of our people. Hello.
We lost you somewhere there. I don't know whether maybe you were audible to them, but you were not to me.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, clearly.
Chairperson, I don't know where I was lost. But I think the issue, of IDT and the human personnel, but for me, the job creation is very critical, Chairperson, because we live on daily basis with the plight of our people. It's a reality. And I would even ask, what is the projection in terms of the figure of the employment? And also, I would also want to know, are we looking forward, and this is, I'm doing this with persuasion, Chairperson, are we looking forward in sourcing people that will be employed, even fully employed, even in as laborers, even for 5 years? It's okay, rather than having a company that will back 40 million or 20 million in tender, then after the project, it's gone. Our people are back to square one. It's like we are in a merry-go-round of poverty. I would really. I think it did happen in Johannesburg, in the Johannesburg Metro, where some people were absorbed or insourced, because we know that if we have the projects that will take 10 years, why not employ 30% of this workforce for the next 5 years or 6 years? Because you know you need them. Then 70%. You give it to out to tenders. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Shabalala. Honorable Frans Calvi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to Chair, Minister, support staff, everyone present, and thank you very much for the presentation that we've received, Chairperson. I'm a little bit in a disadvantaged position, seeing that a majority of the speakers raised already what I wanted to raise. Safe to say, Chair, that some of my main concerns would have been the advisory panel, the funding of the advisory panel, And if the funding has been included in the proposed budget allocation that we've seen of or that has been presented, then Chair, in terms of the proposed organogram that has been presented to us, I see there's senior management and there's non-senior management. And then from there, I don't see any support staff that's part of the organogram. So my question in this regard would be, if they plan to use labor brokers for the rest of the positions, or how are they going to ensure that low-skilled workers are also incorporated in this entity or SOE, whatever they are calling it. And Chairperson, I would really like to welcome the initiative that they are presenting. Everything looks good on paper, and we really hope that this will materialize in the long run in terms of job creation, effective job creation, taking into consideration our current unemployment rate, our young people that's looking for job opportunities, but also in terms of the unemployed graduates that they will be looked at in terms of employment opportunities in this new structure. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Skalbeck. Honorable Siwista.
Thank you, Chair. I hope the network is on my side today. Chair, we know that the tendering process always, the government spends a lot of money in the process of tendering anything. So what I want to know is that the first thing that I want to ask the minister is that, can't we consider having a state-owned construction company to deal with whatever that we need to deal with this? Because we already have expertise in the field where there are people that were in the IDT. And today, IDT is being left out, not because of their non-performance is based on the non-intervention from the Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, and now it's going to be closed down. What's going to happen to the people that have expertise there? The second one is that a state-owned construction company is going to assist the government to deal with anything without going through the tender processes that we have to go through, because a tender project manager or whoever, there's a lot of money that has been spent between the processes that's going to happen. And having a state-owned construction company that is going to deal with everything is also going to assist the government and the department itself to curb the things that we deal with, especially something that is an eye-opener is what happened with the Bay Bridge project, as we know what's happened in the hype and everything. And the tenders are going to save us. We are cutting the middlemen. We are going to make sure that everything is done. And if we have that state-owned construction company, we are going to ensure that we employ people permanently, so with benefits. And we are not going to rely on companies that are going to benefit at the end of the day. And then the government or the society is not going to benefit from everything. And then my other question is, what will be the role of the PMTE in this whole thing? Because when I look at some of the things we talk about in one of the slides, we talk about maintenance and refurbishing monitoring and
related networks, independence.
slide talks about what was this mandate and what's going to happen. What does this? We seem to have lost Honorable Sewis. I think it's the connectivity challenges. Honorable Sewis.
Yeah, but I think I'm done. I don't know where I left off.
Okay.
My questions, I think the last questions where I see that I got lost was when I asked about the role of the PMTE. What would be the role of the PMTE in this whole Kassala's part?
Okay, thank you. Honorable Matebula and followed by Honorable Njobo. Honorable Matebula. Honorable Matebula's hand is up, but I don't know whether is he still around.
I'm here, sir.
Okay, Honorable Matebula is stands down. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Let me start by welcoming the presentation as presented by Dr. Ramaphosa. I must say that I do welcome the presentation and also the steps that we what the president indicated in Parliament last week when he spoke about the issue of economic recovery plan, as this is part of it. So I will not therefore kind of take any person who would criticize this seriously, because we've been saying that we have an economy that is not performing well. We've got an unemployment that is actually rising. We have also indicated that some of the activities that were supposed to have happened in order to boost the economy and bring about the growth in the economy was or were disrupted by the advent of COVID-19. So when you look at how our economy has been performing, one needs to, you know, indicate this in this meeting that one, in terms of the economic growth, the South African economy grew by 1.3% in 2017 and 0.08% in 2018. So I must also indicate that the World Bank in fact projected in 2019 growth at 1.3 and accelerating to further 1.7 in 2020. Given the population growth and gross domestic product, GDP, per capita, growth has been close to zero or nil in 2014. Now, Chair, this has actually left a little room or nothing to reduce poverty in South Africa. Now, Chair, the government or this department has come up with this particular plan. in order to assist that we reduce poverty and we create unemployment. And people have audacity to criticize and say all sorts of things, which is something that I am not in support of. This is one kind of a vehicle that we should support, which will actually bring about the economic growth back to path, and also our people will be able to benefit out of it. Say in an event, maybe it happens that they somewhere, somehow, this is not doing well. Of course, Chair, we are at liberty to can advise properly. But it is my considered view, Chair, that some within us, instead of looking at this vehicle as a vehicle to bring about down the unemployment and try to ensure that there's an economic growth, we decided to politic about it at the expense of the plight of our people. So, Chair, in short, given what I have indicated according to economic growth of South Africa, I want to say that this is the perfect mode of transport that we should use, you know, to support the growth of our economy. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Matsebula. Honorable Ntshobo.
Thank you, Chairperson. My apology. Mine is out of this meeting agenda. But the Minister, I would like to know the issue of network in Akashia. It's very bad. I want to know who's responsible for the network in parliamentary villages, because the parliament says it's Department of Public Works. Public Works is parliament. Thanks, Chairperson.
Honorable Ntshobo's question raising, because Honorable Shabalala and Honorable Siwisa had challenges of network, and they both here in Akashia. Thank you, Honorable Ntshobo. Honorable Minister and Dr. Makhoba, just few issues on the presentation and all that surrounds the presentation. One, the project that you mentioned, the one of Sane, which is part of investment drive, but also which is not BBBEE compliant. How then do we ensure that this partnership that the government is going to enter with the private sector will drive the transformation agenda of the ruling party? Because this one, the one of Tswane, I think you know, Dr. Ramakhoba, you were interviewed, and even the person of the company has asserted that it is not BEE compliant. That is the first one. Two, as we all know, that I agree with those that the infrastructure is going to be one of the critical drivers for the economy recovery. I agree with those. But how do we ensure that, as you will be working with all the relevant spheres of government, what I like is that Dr. Ramakhoba also has an experience in local government. How then do we ensure that this recovery is, I understand the economic hubs of our country, but how do we ensure that it reaches the most disadvantaged areas, the most disadvantaged municipalities, where you really need the infrastructure? Remember,
our country is so skewed the way it is, whether it was deliberate or whatever. But you have the rural areas or the rural provinces, the Eastern Cape, the KZN, and the Limpopo, where you still need infrastructure, that is the road infrastructure. So how do we ensure that this drive, it advantages the most rural of our provinces, the infrastructure investment? I just wanted to tell, I'm also issue of the structure, and the finance. We have the unions out there protesting on the fact that they have not been given increment this year. But and then the Minister of Finance saying that the bulk of the budget, it goes to the public sector in terms of salary. And looking at this structure that you're presenting to us, yes, it is a high-level team that you brought in. But looking at it, the high-level team is going to earn high salaries. How then that addresses what Minister Mboweni was saying, that the bulk of the budget goes to salaries. Looking at this, and even now, you're talking of an 11 million that has been set aside for this period, maybe period of 6 months. 11 million has been set aside for these positions that are here. And if you look at these positions, they all senior managers, senior management. So I don't know, but it has been approved. But to me, if you are going to have a structure here that will have for lack of a better word, a big head and small whatever, it's going to be that bloated. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I did not hear you that well towards the end, but I hope we could get some of your questions also again. Chairperson,
Minister, the challenge, yes, that was raised by Honorable Jobo, I'm also in Acacia.
Yes, yes.
Wanted to address the issue of the debt. Thank you.
Yes, if I can address the issue of the network, it has been raised with me by the Honourable Chair. I went to go and find out from DPWI, are they dealing with the fibre and the connections and the Wi-Fi of the villages? And the response, Chairperson, is that Public Works is not dealing with Wi-Fi connections, but it is Parliament. Parliament is responsible for that. I have asked Public Works to contact Parliament, the relevant people in Parliament dealing with the Wi-Fi connections, because members are still going to need the Wi-Fi connections for, I don't know for how long, because, you know, with people working from home and the threat of a second wave of coronavirus, we must sort out this problem. So I will take it up also today with the speaker, chairperson, and then we will send you an email later this afternoon. But I agree with you that honorable members must be able to get proper connections. So we're working on it right now as we speak, Honourable Chairperson and members. Chairperson, I will make a few general comments, and then I will certainly, Dr. Ramakgopa and DM can also come in. Chairperson, I've now repeated this quite often. Now, the Parliament is there to make laws. And Parliament approved the Infrastructure Development Act in 2014. Parliament is also there to approve budgets. And Parliament has approved our budget. And certainly we are living in a country where we want to build the rule of law that is consistent with our constitution. And therefore, as DWI, if there's anything that we are doing that's inconsistent with the law or inconsistent with the constitution, I think the honorable members can raise it with us at any time. You also have the separation of powers, where you've got the executive that is there to execute and Parliament is oversight over it. Now, I'm going to repeat what I said many times before, Chairperson, is that in the sixth administration, government was reconfigured and the Department of Infrastructure was created. And one of the rationale behind creating this department was to deal with the fragmentation of infrastructure. Thereafter, in August of 2019, there is a government gazette where the president gazetted that the PICC will become part of DPWI. Also that IDMS, the infrastructure delivery model system, that was a national treasury, in the same gazette, it was also moved to DPWI. So to still have a question today where PICC is sitting, PICC is within the Department of Public Works, legally done through a gazette. Now, in terms of the existing budget that is being approved by Parliament, we have not extra money to go and create ISA, because we mustn't create that impression. We had the supplementary budget, the adjustment budget is coming next week. There are all processes where all of these things are done. But we have reprioritized our budget so that we can include the establishment of ISA. Now, again, how do you establish a structure within government? It is prescribed by law. The department has been created by the Department of Public Service Administration and that act, and it's been signed off by the minister. The positions within there, you cannot create positions that doesn't currently exist within government. So the organogram of the government currently prescribed in law makes provision for your chief directors, your directors, people lower down. It's prescribed in law. You can't go and create something that you think of. And therefore, the structure was signed up of in terms of the Public Service Act by Minister Mkhunu last month. Also that because it is a new department and it's reconfigured in the sixth administration, we had to create a structure. But the plan and the strategy of government is clear that we want to invest more in infrastructure. We need to get investment in, and therefore cabinet approved the structure in principle in May this year, and we went out to go and establish the structure. So legally, if we've done anything wrong that's outside of the law, then it will be better to tell us, Minister, you've not acted properly in terms of the law. But these things have been gazetted. Also, the oversight of the PICC. PICC is now part, in terms of the Gazette of 2019, it's now part of DPWI. And I've repeatedly said these things in the committee. I've repeatedly said, look at the Infrastructure Development Act. But these questions are being raised over and over again. I also want to say, a chairperson, that it is not only at national government where you can create an agency. Many provinces have got agencies. KZN has got them. in the Western Cape, you've got West Grow. The budget of West Grow is 50 million rand a year just for salaries. The total cost of West Grow in the Western Cape is 179 million. So I can go on and show members that it is quite legal and appropriate to establish an administrative arm of government. And in this case, ESA is there to administer infrastructure. We didn't take work away from anybody within the existing DPWI structure. The PFDE is part of the DPWI structure. You all know there are two votes. There's one vote for DPWI and there's one vote for the PMTE. That vote was also approved by a parliament. So the PFDE and ESA, they complement each other. They are working together because we've got one focus in mind, and that is government, that we want to make sure that we create more jobs. So the one is not displacing the other. In terms of the advisory panel, you know, ask us what is the role of the advisory panel. The role of the advisory panel is that on a needs basis, we will turn to the professionals in there and ask them to assist us with a particular need that we have and use their professional capacity. And again, it's people from the private sector. So it is not just additional. All of these things has been existed in law before we came to the sixth administration. There was an advisory panel in the past that has advised the PICC. So this is certainly nothing new. And then I just also want to address the issue of implementing. What is the difference between ESA and the implementing agency? There are three implementing agencies. There's KUHA, there's the DBSA, and there's IDT. IDT was established in terms of a trust with a mandate to go out and build social infrastructure. And you all know the history of IDT. But it will also be good to read the trust of IDT. So the IDT cannot be compared with ESA, because when we have got infrastructure projects within DPWI, DPWI can select any of the three agencies, DBSA, KUHA, or IDT, to do the implementation. So there's also no confusion there, because it's prescribed in law. If I can just turn to Honorable Sawisa, she has raised the issue before of the state-owned company. Once again, there's no state-owned company in law, and if the members of parliament want to create a bill that can lead to the establishment of a state-owned construction company, that is certainly the prerogative of government, I mean of parliament. But similarly, again, in terms of the law, all tenders are prescribed in terms of the PFMA, the Public Finance Management Act, the Municipal Finance Management Act, the Preferential Procurement Act, and all its regulations. So it's all prescribed in law. So I will, like I proposed before to Honorable Sawisa, we will have to change the law and establish a state-owned company by a law. To the members who are supporting us, I can assure you the main purpose is to assist all three spheres of government, state-owned entities, national-aligned departments. ESA will be there to assist them with the technical know-how and the technical help to do project preparation, to even go out and help them to raise funding for all the infrastructure projects. At local government, we are working together with MISA, the Municipal Infrastructure Agency. And again, MISA is being established to assist especially local government. So really, Chairperson, there are a lot of existing infrastructure, organizations or structures within government. In the process of establishing ISA, we've consulted with all of them. And I've also reported that to the committee before about the ongoing consultation with those structures. And like I said in my first introduction, Chairperson, anytime that the committee wants to have more information, ISA is being approved legally. ISA will continue to do the work and always ready, willing and able to come and report to the committee at any time. But we can't at this late stage, not on the basis of law, but on the basis of not supporting any development, any progress in the country, question the existence of ISA. I think, Chairperson, I've said it many times before, and I will now advise the Honourable Member to go and read the Infrastructure Development Act, to go and read all of the plan that we have produced, the plan that was approved by Cabinet, but stop playing politics with a good initiative that we would like to help our people out of poverty. Chairperson, just on the issue of partnership with the private sector that you've raised, and you've mentioned a particular project that we've launched about 2-3 weeks ago. I will ask Dr. Ramakopa to respond to that. On the issue of salaries, that is dealt with by the Minister of DPSA. It's not part of our mandate, but even the salaries in the structure that we have created for ISA is also prescribed in law. We cannot go and sit and decide what salaries we want to pay. Also, I don't think it's a bloated structure, Chairperson. It is the minimum basics to start ISA with. And the 23 million, we have got that money in our budget from now until the end of the financial year, which is the 31st of March. We were able to reprioritize our budget on unspent money and money that we could see we were not going to spend. And that was also approved by the National Treasury. So again, we've done nothing illegal. Thank you, Chairperson. I will give over to Dr. Ramakopa to fill in on the other details. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Chair. Maybe just to segue into the last point that the Minister makes, I guess let's ask a different question. What do you get for 23 million? Obviously, once we get to cost the structure for a period of a year, it will be substantially more. So the answer is the following. We got 340 billion rands of injection into the South African economy, working with 8 people. So with 23 million, and in fact, I think it's going to go to over anything between 80 and 100 million, the country is going to get an injection of 1 trillion rand into infrastructure. And what are the jobs that are going to be created? What is the benefit to industry, both the secondary sectors, construction, manufacturing, growing the GDP? So that's the question we're answering. So the issue is not the 23. What do you get with 23 million? We have shown that with 8 people, myself and 6 other colleagues, that Minister Dilili was generous to accommodate from DPWI and second to the office, we put together the South Africa, the Sustainable Infrastructure Development Symposium. In a period of 4-5 months, we got 340 billion rands into the country's economy. We have been able to unlock the projects that you are seeing. Sunrail projects, TCTA project, bulk water infrastructure, human settlements, 190,000 units of housing development done by 8 people. So that's the question we're answering. So we'll come back with the full costing, and I can tell you it will not be 23 million. It will be close to 100 million. We'll come and share with you. The question is, what do you get for 100 million? We're able to show you that you are getting substantially more. We will show you what is the benefit to the South African economy. And then the other question that is being raised is this thing of the structure. That is bloated. So that's how, what the structure is. Let me share something with you. The kind of skills that we want at Deputy Director General level, someone will be responsible for investment planning and oversight, someone responsible for infrastructure delivery management and infrastructure investment funding. Just on those two, those Deputy Director Generals, you're either going to find to get the qualification a development finance analyst with a strong background of project structuring and or an actuarial scientist. And if you are targeting black and in particular women, these people don't come cheap. And in fact, I can tell you now that they are employed where they are and they are getting substantially more. I'm sure they are getting 3 million plus where they are getting. So you will not get that kind of skill at the chief director level. We are not just looking for someone who has no experience, just a master's program. We are looking for an actuarial scientist, in some instances, and a development finance analyst, because these are people who are going to do project packaging and preparation. So these are people who have worked with the banks. These are people who have worked with the MDBs, multilateral development banks, the DFIs, in the financing environment. So these are people who know how to package projects. And because we are hunting for young, black, highly qualified, in particular women, they are not going to come cheap. And that's why you had to pitch it at the level that is appropriate. And the highest level we can go to is a deputy director general. We are going to battle to get the kind of skills that we want. And I can tell you now, if we get people in those positions, and I'm confident that there are young men and women who have a patriotic duty or who want to respond to a patriotic duty, they are going to take a salary cut. And the question I raise is, what do you get for that kind of investment? Yeah. And look at the kind of work that we are doing. We're looking for people who have done a green economy finance. So these are people who have looked into the green bonds, people who are project bonds and that. These are people who have got wide experience, and we have pitched at the level of a chief director. I can tell you, for 1.4 million, you are not going to get, you are going to battle to get the kind of skills that you want, but we're going to go all out to ensure that we get these skills, because we know that there are people who are committed to this country. And all of that, we're going to get the economists to come and do modeling and econometrics and also do modeling in relation to what are the benefits to localization into the economy. So it's evidence-led. So we're bringing science into the work that we're doing. So you are like, so the minimum qualification there is master's and above, PhD. Those are the kind of people that we're looking at. And look at where we're pitching it. You say it's a director, because the BPSA said we can't give you more chiefs than Indians. You have to ensure that there's people reporting to these chief directors, deputy director general. And by the way, this is not in the classic way of government. These are people who do actual work, do project like we've been doing. So we've been able to sit with the minister and the DM and demonstrate to them the kind of work that has led to the successful delivery of the Sustainable Infrastructure Development Symposium. And let me also add the point that the minister indicated. Outside this structure that you see before you now, there's 23 professionals that are sitting at the PICC, previously PICC, that we have roped in, that they are working in tandem with the broader ESA, if you like. So in the last visit that I came here, I presented at that time, I hinted at the work that we're doing to establish ESA. And we said that at the right time, once we have made sufficient progress, we'll come back. And here we are. The minister makes an important point. Part of that framework of ESA is to accommodate the PICC. So the PICC, as we have it, of course, is incubated at the IDC. Of course, now is reporting to minister in DPWI under the executive authority of Minister Dilil. They are part of this universe. So all you are seeing is these numbers, but below the 23 additional professionals, engineers, people in the built environment who are helping with this effort going forward. And I think the minister has responded to the issue around whether this is an SOE. No, cabinet has said that it's the intention to establish an SOE over a period of time. We are putting together a business case of what that SOE must look like. We will indicate what is the kind of piece of legislation that we are invoking to bring effect to that SOE. We'll indicate what schedule is that SOE. We'll also do the costing of that SOE. So that's a function of a comprehensive a business case exercise. And then it gets to be to go through the necessary approvals in government. Where we are, we only have a branch that is called the ESA. But because of the elevation and the explanation I gave in relation to where you want to peg the kind of level so that we are able to attract the necessary skills, the head of the ESA reports directly to the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure. So low-income workers will not be, low-skilled workers, I'm sorry, will not be employed in ESA. What ESA will do will create the necessary environment for construction and infrastructure to happen. And as those happen, then you are able to absorb the supply side. So your low-skilled workers are not in ESA. In ESA, you want high-caliber people, marquee skills that are required for you to do project preparation. These are skills that are not associated with the public sector, by the way. These are skills that are associated with the financing institutions, your DFI commercial banks and the pension funds. Those are the people who are in possession of those skills, and we are confident that we are going to attract those skills to come this side and work with the public sector, because we have demonstrated over the past 5 months that if we've got additional capacity, we can create a serious injection into the South African economy, in addition to the 340 billion that we have attracted. And then with regards to the transformation aspects of this program. So Chair, the point I've been making in the media is that there are multiple stages or lenses of transformation. The first one is around ownership consideration. And of course, the Mooiplaas project doesn't meet that. And let me make the point that this is money that is raised by the developer himself, 34 billion. It's nothing that comes from the fiscus. So all that you have managed to do is to unlock the bulk infrastructure to the tune of 1.1 billion, a combination of the municipality of Tshwane and also Gauteng to improve the roads and the bulk as it relates to wastewater treatment plants and also a provision of energy or electricity, if you like. That's the 1.1 billion. So the municipalities will run their own, and province, they'll run their own procurement process as stipulated in law. But we have said to the developer that, yes, you are a listed company, you are not transformed, you are not meeting the charter requirements, you are bringing your own 34 billion. But because we are coming into this space and we are unlocking this project, we are enabling it by 1.1 billion, there are other concessions that we want. What is the first concession? That the supply of material inputs into this development, a minimum of 40% must come from black-owned entities. They have committed to that, and in fact, in their own view, they suggest to us that they can surpass it. So that's the first part. So suddenly someone who's been manufacturing door frames and window frames, black-owned, didn't have an offtake agreement, has got an offtake for the next 5 years because the 50,000 units are going to be built over a period of 5 years. So that person then is able to, because of an offtake agreement, is able to raise money from the banks, invest in his or her assets, the factory there, employ more people, introduce greater levels of efficiency, become more competitive, and look for other markets outside this development. So that's the first one. The second one is that that person then employs more people. Then the second major requirement there is that obviously they are going to employ 41,000 people. So the country is hemorrhaging jobs. So we say 2.2 million people have lost their jobs, at least in the last quarter when states reported the quarter that SA reported on. So we're adding a 41,000 jobs. And we know where these jobs are going to come from. So what are the nearest townships here? It's Mamelodi and the areas of Bronkhorstspruit. Again, the developer has set up the community leaders yesterday called me that they had their first meeting with the developer to agree on how they are going to source those jobs. Those jobs will come from those localities. That's the second tick that the project has. What is the third tick? The third tick is that there are people here in Tshwane, majority public servants, or people who are income within an income bracket of 3,500 to 22,000, who hitherto would not have thought of staying in Mooi Kloof. Mooi Kloof is the second most sought after address in Tshwane. The first address that people want is Water Kloof, where the minister is staying, the rich are staying there. The next address is Mooi Kloof. You couldn't accommodate people in that income bracket. So suddenly, the developer has agreed that out of the 50,000 units that the income bracket is going to receive a share of 15,000 units of people who don't have ownership of a property. They're going to introduce a new asset class on their balance sheet. These are people who don't qualify for an RDP for the subsidy because they're earning too much, but they can't raise money from the bank's debt financing of possible new assets in those locations. Suddenly 15,000 households times four, you are talking 60,000 people who suddenly are going to stay. That's transformation. You are staying in the most sought after address. You are within 15 kilometers radius from the CBD of Tshwane. What is the fourth transformation effort there? As a result of this development of 50,000 units Mooi Kloof, the city of Tshwane is going to get an additional 270 million of rates and taxes into their finances. They are able to redirect that money, provide water to Hammanskraal, provide roads to Mabopane, provide a decent shelter, community services in Soshanguve, do maintenance in Atteridgeville, ensure that they rehabilitate the landfill sites in Centurion and Bronkhorst Spring. That's transformation. And in the course of that, they're going to ensure that the jobs are created. So we should not look at transformation just on who owns this project. We must look at tick all other boxes and ensure that the benefits is across the entire value chain. And of course, the developers issued a public statement, media statement, to say that they are at an advanced stage of ensuring that they've got a BE partner. So that's the role that we are playing. Minister Delisle and Deputy Minister Kivit insist all the time, Ramukhop, where are these transformation efforts? Because part of this build program must ensure that it's transformative and it's inclusive. And by the way, on that, they are not pulling back. They insist that we must bring those transformation targets to ensure that we are able to realize the benefits. And I think Minister has attended to all the questions. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Minister, and thank you, Dr. Ramakhopa. Any second takers, honorable members? Honorable Hicklin, Honorable Suisa, Honorable Grammar, Honorable Shabalala, in that order. Honorable Hicklin, yes.
Minister, I would like to make one statement before I say anything else, please. We cannot be berated for asking questions in a committee meeting. We are here mandated by the citizens of South Africa to do oversight. That is our purpose on this portfolio committee. Please treat us with the same respect that we treat you. That is my observation. The second point I'd like to make is, you speak about 23 million rand that has been taken away from projects that is already available in the budget. What projects have been compromised? Thank you.
Honourable Suisa.
Thank you, Chair. One question that I left out in my previous asking of questions. There is a section that says that private sector is going to be involved, which means we talk about people investing in everything for this infrastructure SA to take off. Now, what I want to know is, what intervention is the department going to do to implement to ensure that these investors do not influence the appointment of contractors and project management? And they also do not influence which projects need to be prioritized. And again, Minister, I'm going to take you back to the state-owned construction company. What are you, you told me about the PMFA and the MFMA. What are you going to do to influence that a state-owned construction company actually sees the day of light? What are you willing to do to ensure that we actually get that state-owned construction company to do away with tenders and everything else, where more money is spent unnecessarily on processes that could have been curbed, and the government being able to save millions of rands by cutting out the middlemen? What are you going to do to ensure that we do have that construction company taking into consideration, you told us about legislations that have been put in place for all of these things, that the tenders are there because it's per legislation. What are you going to do to address that shortcoming? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. It's
Honorable Graham Murray.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Thank you. Yes, I'd like to second what my colleague Honorable Hicklin had to say. At the end of the day, our job is to interrogate what is being presented to us, to make out that we're coming as Johnny Come Latelys, you know, after the fact, is actually extremely rude. We have never been given a proper presentation on ISA. This is the very first time we are actually getting to understand the structures, what it means, where the money's coming from, what the reporting structure looks like. All of this has happened without any input from this committee. And this is the very first opportunity we are getting to interrogate some of this information. I'd like to thank Dr. Ramakgopa for clarifying the positioning of the PICC. The gazette that the minister referred to, all it did was give the minister the chairpersonship of the secretariat of the PICC. It did not move the PICC into the department. And this was clarified now by Dr. Ramakgopa, who said that the PIC is being incubated at the IDC. If you look at that structure, the president is still in charge of the PICC. He is the chairperson. The minister is the chairperson of the committee and of the secretariat, but it still resides under the president's office. So if I'm incorrect, please correct me, but that is my understanding from what I've seen in terms of the structures we've been presented with. And that's ergo my question, do we have any oversight as this department, this PC, over the PICC? And then just also, I would like to thank Dr. Ramakgopa for that second slide that he presented now with the structure, the reporting structure of the department. If we'd been given that in the first place, we would have then maybe not had as many questions around who's being appointed, et cetera, et cetera. But if we're not being given full information, obviously we're going to get suspicious of what's being presented, because it feels as though stuff's being hidden from this portfolio committee, and nobody's playing open cards with us. All we're asking for is a chance to actually understand, because this is a hugely complex scenario. This is a completely new structure. It's a completely new methodology. It's a completely new way of dealing with infrastructure. And as I said at the outset, I think it's fantastic that we are looking at a centralized infrastructure program that can coordinate infrastructure across all three spheres of government. But you are dealing with trillions of rands of money and asking us to kind of just trust you while you kind of give us half the information that is required. So all we're asking for is, if you play open cards with us, you give us the sort of information that was presented in that last slide by Dr. Ramakgopa, and then at least we know what we're dealing with, and we can say, okay, fair enough, these are the people you've appointed, we understand why the salary bill needs to be what it is, we can see exactly what direction you're taking with respect to the organogram that you've presented us. I submitted questions, parliamentary questions, 2-3 months ago on the ISA to the minister. I still haven't received a response on it. So again, one starts to wonder, why is nobody sharing information? So I'd just like to say that to say that we're playing politics, I think, is completely unreasonable. This is our job. We've been put here to do it, and we just need to be treated with some level of respect. Thank you.
Chairperson.
Honorable Chabalala, yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to say, by nature, oversight is a curious, inquisitive, and also provocative. Hence, after all the questions, Dr. Ramahopa came with all the details. I was saying to myself, the devil is in the detail. We got to know, because remember that when we sit as a committee, whoever that is coming to account before us, it's either we question or it's either we persuade each other towards a certain direction. It's not a one-way street. I think minister and officials, including you, Dr. Ramahopa, we are going to be spending a lot of time. We still have many years that we're going to spend. And believe me, we are going to ask questions that we have asked last year and so forth. But I think we need to be cool-headed, and not say, like I said, not say I once said this, because Nati, there are things that we have said, but we not say we are repeating ourselves. I think we need to be patient and cool-headed. This is the space of politics, and I'm happy that with all the value supply chain, I got to be convinced that there is a value for money here. But like I said, it's a developmental approach where we are going to get the details and interrogate. If we interrogate and ask a question 5 months down the line that you have asked today, please just answer that question. It saves us emotions, all of us, and we leave this meeting happy. And yeah, that's the way of working with people, because they may not say something that you want to hear. Sometimes you may feel that it's illogic, but that's your emotions and what you keep inside, so that we are able to work together here. With that, Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Shabalala. I think in a way you have assisted me one way or another. Minister and Dr. Ramahopa, we will ask questions. Even if we call you tomorrow, we will ask questions. We will raise issues if we feel that we don't understand this. And if we feel that we think that this is not necessary, we won't take decisions for you that you have taken as the executive and the officials, but we will ask questions. So please, next time when you respond, understand that we are here to do that, to ask where we don't understand. Thank you, Honorable Shabalala. You have made my work easier, because I think the minister and Dr. Ramahopa, the way that they have responded, much as that you have told us what we wanted to know, but the posture was a bit arrogant. And I don't think as members, when we come here, we expect that from you. We expect to respect as much as we respect you to tell us what we are asking for. I think one just issue that I would as a follow up, minister, in the explanation that you have given us, and also I think Dr. Ramahopa flighted the full organogram indicating as you was explaining that this 11 million that you're complaining about, or the 23 million
may go up to 100 million. The information that we don't have, and tomorrow when we ask these questions, is going to be as if we're probing something. The information must not be like limited when you're giving us information, because when you end up listening to them, I don't know whether you understand that word together, I'm just saying this proper, but you are giving us limited information, not the full information. We don't have the organogram. You have just shown us the positions that maybe they've been currently occupied, but not the full organogram. And the reality is that when you come with the budget next year and you're saying to us, the budget for this branch is 120 million, we will raise questions because we have not seen the full organogram. And it will be as if we're asking nonsense. And we don't. We're asking what we want to know. It's when you don't give someone the full cup, you just give that person the quarter of the information. Over to you, Minister, and Dr. Ramakgopa.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Chairperson, I must assure the members and yourself, this is not a matter of disrespect. But we are on a public platform, and the whole country can listen in to us. So when information is painted as being incorrect, it's also my duty to correct it. And the way I've corrected it was not to dispute what the honorable members have said, but merely referred them to process. So I always will respect this committee. I understand democracy. So please, we are all politicians. And the only thing that I'm asking for also is also some respect to the minister and ISA. This respect is mutual. So if I must correct some wrong perceptions created on this public platform, it's also my duty, Chairperson, to do so. Again, let me go to the PICC. Now, I think there's also confusion with the PICC technical task team and the PICC as a structure. Yes, it is correct that the PICC Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Council is chaired by the president. And on that structure, all ministers serve there, all premiers, all district mayors. That is the council chaired by the president. Then you've got the PICC Commission. And the commission consists of the structure of a PICC Management Committee, which is in the management committee, you've got a provincial representation and a national representation. Then you've got the PICC secretariat, and the mandate is also prescribed in the act. That's also chaired by myself and Minister Barbara Creasy served on there, Minister Masondo, and also Minister D.M. Park Tau. So we are a small committee that do the administration of the council that we report to. There will be a next council meeting on the 26th of November, and then we prepare all the resolutions of the previous council. We then take to the council that is chaired by the president. Now, Chairperson, because this is an evolving, it's a first for South Africa, it's a first that we've got this infrastructure department that we are putting together. As things evolve, you know, we will continue to keep members informed. There's not no past history where we can go look at and say there was an infrastructure department before. We had to start almost from scratch after the president has gazetted this in August of 2019. And also gazetted that the PICC, that is the commission, has also transferred to DPWI. So I want to assure members, it is nothing of arrogance, it's nothing of emotions. It is just that I want to be factual, and I want to make sure that what goes out to the public is factual, and the public understand also what we are doing. So, Chairperson, maybe just one last point that I also need to raise, Chairperson, is that part of the work that we are also doing, we are also looking at all the uncompleted infrastructure projects of the fifth administration to see how we can take them forward, how we can get them going again. And then, of course, a lot of lessons that we've learned from there. And then we also give a report to the Presidential Council, when we report there. So that is another function that ISA is busy with, to look at how we can, lack of a better word, salvage some of the old projects. Then in terms of Honorable Hicklin's question, I will certainly send her the reprioritization of the budget. I don't have the exact details of the projects, but I will send it to her. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Yeah, I want to respond to the PICC just to give greater clarity in addition to the minister. So why is the PICC first and foremost incubated at the IDC? It's because of the point I made earlier on, that the kind of caliber of people you want, qualification, were of such a pay grade that this, the levels in government would not been able to accommodate them. So what then the previous administration did was to have a dispensation where the PICC technical task team, just the administrative arm of the council that is chaired by the president. So these are the bureaucrats, if you like, were then placed at the IDC. And it's IDC that went out and recruited them, and then they became employees of the IDC. But then to make a connection with government, what the previous administration said was that through a dispensation of the memorandum of agreement, IDC enters into that agreement with what was Department of Economic Development in the fifth administration. And that's how the accounting lines of PICC went through the then Minister of Economic Development and then found its way to the council itself. With the advent of the sixth administration and the reconfiguration of the space, the infrastructure was then moved to DPWI. So the agreement in terms of what prevailed in the sixth administration now is between DPWI and IDC. So the PIC technical task team then reports to Minister De Lille. So I thought I must just make the point so that you see the linkages. Now with the introduction of ISA, that PICC component, the technical task team, the bureaucrats, they then are working in tandem within the whole ecosystem of ISA so that we are able to deliver the results going forward. I thought I must give greater clarity on that part. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister, and Dr. Makgopa, for the presentation and the responses that we got from you today, and for the clarities that the honorable members have sought. As this is a work in progress, we will from time to time ask for the reports and updates. For now, I think we can allow you to then log out of the meeting so that we continue dealing with
with the minutes of the previous meeting. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chair.
Ms. Martinez?
Thank you, Chairperson. I would have thought the minutes will be dealt with tomorrow when we do the report, purely because we have not sent them to the members to go through. So unless then the Chairperson can give us a go-ahead to invite them.
No, I was asking because the second item in terms of the agenda that has been sent to us is the issue of consideration and adoption of minutes. But if you have not yet sent them, let's deal with them tomorrow. Honorable members, I will then say it again. I really appreciate the way that we deal with issues as this committee. The issue of ISA, the reason why we wanted it to come, because there have been questions that we asked. The presentation that we got was of the infrastructure investment, and as such, we even said we want to be workshopped on the Infrastructure Act, which was done by our team, Ushu Ape, which made us at least to understand. Now there is a branch or a directorate that is within the department, then it needs all of us to work. The reality is that the economic recovery will be done through investment in infrastructure. I think that's one of the major critical points. I think even the president has said that several times. So as this portfolio, it means we also have a role to play. We need to focus exactly there to ensure that what is being said is done, what is done is really up to standard, and the money is spent where it really matters most. So we will be there with our eyes and ears playing the oversight role. But I want to, Nola, moving forward, the issue of the network, the challenges that are currently being experienced, especially in Acacia, it's not only Vodacom, Vodacom, MTN, Cell C, all the networks, people that are staying in Acacia, they have challenges of network. So I raised that with the minister last week through our telephone conversation, and she said that she would look after that. I think we need to make a follow-up on that one. The reality is that we're still on this, there is a second wave of COVID-19. It means we're still going to continue holding these virtual meetings. And if we have challenges of network, then how are we going to deal with that? So though Honorable Jobo raised this in this meeting, but to me, it was necessary. But two, Honorable Members, there is a program that we ended up not doing, that of visiting the parks. It's a program that I still think we need to continue with it. One of the things that was raised is that we must use our own committee day. I think we will look at the days, the upcoming program that we'll have, and we'll take one Wednesday as early as 8 o'clock, try to deal with the two parks, the Acacia and what is the second one?
Pelican.
Pelican, not that one, because the Laboria is
everything is up to standard there. We need to take one Wednesday and look at our program, and other than having a portfolio meeting in Parliament, we use that day and that time to come and check all these things in this parliamentary villages, all those things that we have raised before. And if you can see now what the public works raised with the committee that deals with the budget of the speaker, it's different from what they raised with us when they said that they are going to demolish all the houses that have asbestos roof that are preferred. They're not doing that now. They're doing something else. So I think we need to also look at that. Remember when we invited even the commissioner of police, we had that meeting earlier this year, but what is currently being implemented is different from what they promised that they're going to implement. So I think as the committee, we have a lot to do, and we must not be demoralized by what is happening in our committee. And if you can check what is happening in other portfolio committees, what is happening in ours is not, I've seen in others, you could see that they can even fight, but we always treat ours, I think, in an orderly way. Even if we differ with the minister, even if we raise our voices and the minister raises her voices, but it's not what is happening. I think we're still fine, we're still doing well, honorable members. But I want us, Nola, to do this, not next week, because we already have program, but one of those Wednesdays, we need to visit and write down all these issues that we feel they said that they're going to do. They have not yet done them now. Thank you, honorable members. Any other issues that we still have time to discuss? Any other issues that we would like to raise as honorable members?
Thank you, Chair.
Yes, Chair. Honorable Solicitor. Yes.
I have a serious problem about the way the minister does his conducting and the different answers that she gives at different platforms, and she does not value, or how should I put it, she does not adhere to the decisions that were taken in a formal meeting where resolutions were taken. And when she gets to another platform, she gives out other answers, which she hasn't. So I don't know how this thing can be dealt with to make her aware that, first and foremost, we are accountable to the committee. We are the first people that we are going to be asked as to, how did you leave 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 to happen when there is a committee in place? And yet she's got a tendency of undermining the committee and gives answers that are suitable to her pertaining, depending on the platform where it is. And I think we must also write a letter to her to find out that in the meeting data, this, the decision that was taken is that the houses are going to be demolished. Now what we are seeing is that houses that were renovated before, when we came in, are again being renovated. So where did that decision take place? Who influenced that decision? She needs to give us answers, because everybody is asking us. And it's very embarrassing that half of the committees actually stays in Acacia Park. Half of the committee stays in Acacia Park, but the state of the houses that we are staying in is not conducive enough. So I don't know how we can go about it to deal with the resolutions that were taken and to hold her accountable. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Siwisa, Honorable Graham Murray, Honorable Hicklin.
Thanks, Chair. First of all, I'd like to thank you for supporting us today and for standing up for our committee. I don't think any of us were unreasonable. I don't think any of our questions were unreasonable. And I always worry when the minister keeps talking about the legality of stuff, and none of us ever asked a question about anything being illegal. We were just asking for clarification. So, you know, I really do think, you know, I really appreciate you standing up for our oversight roles and responsibilities and for our committee as a whole. And I think that's what makes our committee differently, is that we all like and respect each other on this committee, and we work so well as a team, always, in everything we do. I don't think we have very, very often conflict within the committee. So I've attended another committee where everybody fights with everybody. The deputy minister spent 10 minutes screaming at me. It was horrendous. I don't know how the people actually get ready for a committee meeting every week. I would hate it. So thank you to this team for always making our committee meetings such a pleasure. And I always walk out of our meetings feeling like we've achieved something as a team. That being said, there was information presented to the Standing Committee on Finance last Friday about public works. And it's always concerning when there's other discussions around public works that are taking place and we're not privy to those. We don't see any of the documentation. We don't understand what the discussions are about. So I'd like to request that our secretariat request the information that was provided to that meeting, so that at the very least we have an understanding of what was discussed and what they covered. We can always go and look on PMG for the minutes of the meeting to see what the actual discussions were around. But it did relate to the parks. The other thing is I have put in a question on the beds. There have been a whole host of beds ordered for Acacia Park. Nobody seems to know much about that, so I have asked that question. And then finally, I don't know if other members are putting in questions to the minister from this department and from this committee, but I haven't had a question answered for close on 2 months, if not a bit longer. None of my questions are coming back. So I don't know if we can't just raise it with the minister's staff as to what the delay is in respect. I mean, some of the questions were done before we went on constituency break. A lot of them were. And I haven't received an answer for some time. So I appreciate if we could ask why it seems to be slow in responding to questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Graham. Honourable Hicklin.
Chair, I need to assure everybody of one thing. Honourable Graham is in Graaff-Reinet and I am in Johannesburg. Please do not think that we are sitting in the same room, because we kind of come up with the same kind of questions all the time. So I'm going to leave what Samantha said because she's covered it. Just in response and in support, Chair, of you, I cannot begin to tell you how much your support of us as the committee really, really means. Because when I listen to other committee members from different portfolios talk about the disconnect between the chair and the members of the committee, I think they're talking in an alternate universe. And I really need to say thank you so much to you, Chair, for actually understanding that our job is oversight. And it's not, as the ministers called, playing politics. It's called doing our jobs. In response to Honourable Suwisa, my front door is about to fall off in Acacia Park. So please believe me, I am one of the people who don't live in a brick house. I live in one of the prefab houses. And I'm terrified every time I open my door that I'm going to get back and it's going to be lying on the ground. So I totally support 100% your assertion as to there were houses that were repaired and upgraded or whatever when we came to Parliament a year ago. There are other houses that are actually falling to pieces and we are sitting in a situation where they're not being looked at. Somewhere along the line, we need to understand the prioritization of which house is going to be looked at. Surely they would do a house by house assessment of what maintenance needs to be done. And so I agree with you, Chair, an evaluation of Acacia Park is mandatory. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honourable Members. Honourable Jobo.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
mine, I'd like to support your input on the issue of us of Wednesday, our committee day to visit two parks, Acacia Park and Pelican, because with this issue of housing, it's not right. And then the house chairperson refused to give us the oversight. But maybe Nola can assist us on the issue of the portfolio committee, not take out this word oversight. Now is the portfolio committee program to visit parks. I'm supporting the issue of let's take our day to visit the Acacia Park, because and this issue of network now is it's not parliament, it's not public work who's responsible for the network. Now it's parliament. My question is it possible for us as portfolio committee to write a letter to the speaker about this issue of network?
Okay, thank you, Honorable Mjobo. Nola?
Yes, Chair, thank you very much. I just want to touch on three issues. First issue is the network issue at the parliamentary villages. While the meeting was going ahead, I tried to do a slight investigation as to where is this coming from, especially after the minister had considered to the fact that she is not, well, Public Works is not responsible. So I spoke to the section manager household in Parliament, in which the responsibility of managing the parks would fall from the parliamentary side. And he had indicated to me that there is some work that's being done in terms of improving the network coverage in the parks, especially Acacia Park. And that project is being done by the parliamentary ICT. So I'm yet to speak to the head of ICT to establish how far are they with the project and how can they best assist members to be able to access network while they are busy upgrading their coverage in the parks. So that's just how far I've gone in terms of trying to establish what's going on that front. So that's one, Chairperson. And then the second one would be the program of the committee. I hear there's an indication that the committee is interested in going to parliamentary villages. I'm not so sure, Chair, how we're going to do this, because our program is fully packed. From this week on, we are having two meetings every week. And the yellow highlighted areas, as you see on your screen, would be set aside for the processing of the expropriation bill. As you know, that the bill has been referred to our committee, so we need to have meetings to that effect. So we thought in the yellow areas, we would make space for the processing of the expropriation bill. And of course, it's not cast in stone. The committee may guide us in terms of how we would like to move forward with that issue. Failing which, if we can't, if we're not going to be able to do it on a Wednesday or on a Tuesday when we have a meeting, we could most probably look at a Friday morning if members would allow. I don't know, because I'm just looking at the realities of our program, because we're looking at a very packed program in this term, obviously based on the other technicalities of lockdown regulations and all of those things. So that's the second one. The third one, being the actual expropriation bill, we have to have meetings on that. And that we're saying next week should be a best opportunity to utilize to just brief the committees as to how we need to move with the bill and what is the process that we should follow in terms of processing the bill. Over and above that, Chairperson, I'd like to apologize in advance that the members have not yet received the Jersey Barrier Wall Oversight Visit Report. It has been a long one. It has been a very tough one to compile, because some of us struggled to even gather probably the information because of the
weather, the wind, because we're also recording via audio. So some of the audio was pretty difficult. So we've had to double check on presentations and do some consultations on our side. However, the members should be having the report this afternoon. Somewhere around 1, we'll be able to send it through to the honorable members and get it ready for consideration tomorrow. And for that, Chairperson, we do apologize. We don't ordinarily do this. We usually send our documents well in advance. But this was just a special case, which was a bit out of our own peril. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Lola, for the updated program. I think as most of the members, in fact, all of us, we're looking forward to engaging and crafting the way forward on the expropriation bill. So to me, it is appropriate that we start next week, Tuesday on the 27th with it. No, we accepting that amendment in our program, because before we didn't have it. Now it's there, and according to the parliament, it has been assigned to us as public works and infrastructure. We need to hit the ground running. People out there are looking at that bill, and we hope that at least this time it will be passed on by the parliament, unlike last time it was rejected. We will do our work, and you as the people that were there even in 2018 when it had to be rejected, because not enough public participation was done. I hope that this time you have covered that in the presentations that you'll be bringing to us. We accept that, we'll work with it. And accepting, of course, your apology on the issue of the report on our oversight visit. We will work, we'll talk on this, even if we talk informally on the date. And then when we agree on the date, it will be pronounced here in the meeting on the date and the day you will utilize for us to go to the parks. We'll especially Acacia Park. This one, it's bad. It is actually bad. Thank you, honorable members, again, for your robust engagement in the meeting that we had, as usually, you always do that. Tomorrow, again, we're meeting at 9 to deal with them, the report and also the minutes of the previous meeting. But the minutes that we'll be dealing with, are you also going to bring today's minutes, Nola, or can you only the last 6 minutes?
Chair, I've already started drafting today's minutes, so they're like halfway through done already. So we'll be able to send all the minutes through to yourself this afternoon. Oh. Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Honorable members, take care, stay safe. The second wave of the COVID-19 is upon us as the country. People are dying. People are contracting the disease. Please observe all the health protocols. Keep indoors. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. Nizi katalele. Ninga ngingishi. Thank you again. The meeting is adjourned.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Bye-bye, members.
Thank you so much, Chair. See you all tomorrow, guys.
Bye, members. Bye.